Hey, this is EQO, and you're listening to The Centering.
Okay, so let's start.
Hello. Hello and welcome. Welcome back to another edition of The Centering, a.k.a. TCR, a.k.a. your favorite esports podcast. Episode 141 coming to you live, pre-recorded from an undisclosed location. The date, February 4th, 2019. The time, 8:35 p.m. Central Standard Time. And this might be the best episode ever. We have part one of our Overwatch League preview as we go over everything. Well, not everything. Most things that have changed since season one. Things that you should know. Things to keep an eye out for. And we also go through the Atlantic Division today. Going through each team, give our thoughts, our opinions, what we know about them. But then later in the week, we will do our Pacific Division and get you set for the second season of Overwatch League, which starts in 10 days exactly. So this timed out pretty well. My name is Tim. I will be one of your hosts for this journey into esports. Alongside me, though, as always, we have Anuj. Hello, Anuj.
What's up, fellas? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. And I have a question for you, Tim.
Go for it.
We say undisclosed location, right? But
yes.
Now we stream.
Yeah.
People can kind of see where we're at this point.
Yeah. So I'll peel back the curtain a little bit if you'd like. Let's say hi to Brett first so he can speak, because you guys aren't allowed to speak until I introduce you.
Czar Tim.
Oh, God.
Pray.
As you speak, Discord almost died.
Oh, no.
It knows that you are about to die.
It's a precursor, yeah. Yeah,
Brett,
I kind of feel like death, but I'm here.
Brett is less than a week. What, 5 days removed from surgery. So he's fighting through it. He's doing it for the listener, though.
I have to be here for the Overwatch preview, man.
He's doing it for the listener.
And it was tough on Brett. I mean, it was tough for Caitlyn, and I think you can pull through as well.
I mean, I'm getting used to it.
You're looking good.
I mean, it's a little bit different, but you know,
we hear it in your voice.
The up tops are looking fresh. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. So the reason I say undisclosed location in the intro, and I've just stuck with it because it's part of TCR lore now, is so when we originally started, we recorded, Brandon, rest in peace, and I would record, and you guys did too at the start, we would record at the radio station. And it's like, you're not like really allowed to do it, but you're also not allowed to do it. You know,
it's a gray area.
It's this gray area that everyone just kind of goes up there to do their own personal work and recording anyways, even if it's not station related whatsoever. So it's always that, you know.
Hey, we've done it. We've done shows for them.
Yeah, I think it would be okay. But like, you know,
yeah,
back then
family.
When we're first starting, like, I mean, only one of us actually is a paid employee to be up there. And yeah, so I just always said undisclosed location. That's kind of like a tongue in cheek, like they'll never find us. But you're right. Now we stream on Twitch. So if you're listening to the podcast version of this, go follow us on Twitch, and then you can watch us do this live, or, you know, just help the show out and follow us. Our Twitter is also at The Center Ring. Keep up with all the show news and everything there. Notifications of when episodes go live and when we're live on Twitch, everything's out there. And then, of course, our website, tcr.gg, that has all of our Discord links. You know, be part of that. That's always a good group in there. And, you know, be a part of the conversation. It's fun times, especially with the Overwatch League starting up, because I understand Overwatch gets this weird hate from the community, from other esports scenes. Every esports gets hates from other scenes, but it seems like Overwatch has this weird, like, people have this weird obsession where they really want to see Overwatch fail. And I don't really ever see why. I mean, if this succeeds, it's probably one of the better chances esports has to making it into the main scene. And maybe that's why. Maybe some people just don't want it in mainstream, right? We want our own little corner of esports left alone. Like, we want to be big dogs. We want to be bigger than the NFL, right? We want our own ESPN of esports, as every website claims they are. But we don't, but people also don't want, like, the corporate side of it to come with it, which I don't want to spoil anything, is impossible. You are never going to become bigger than the NFL and not have franchising and not have corporate behind it. But I digress, because this is happy times for Overwatch League. We don't want to talk about hate and people hoping it fails, because I think overall season one was a big success. We talked a lot about it on the show, but that doesn't mean it was perfect, and things have changed for season two. The first most obvious change, 8 new expansion teams. You now have 20 teams total going
into... That's a crazy amount.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, second season, you have 20 teams.
Yeah. It's fantastic because it's going to bring in viewership from different home audiences now, right? And it gets people more bonded and tied to a team. For me personally, it happened with the Dallas Fuel, right? As somebody that doesn't play a ton of Overwatch, I still found myself kind of pushing myself towards this team, and I hope that happens for people in all these different markets. And I think it's great. Yeah,
they had to bring in two extra Chinese teams for that viewership, right? That big viewership that they have over there.
I'm just talking about even all the American cities. Not just the Chinese cities.
The Chinese fan base gets a bad rap because I know the whole tongue in cheek is like none of their viewers are real, but some of them have to be real. And it is a big ass country. So I'm sure, you know. Maybe and, take like 40%,
and that's not the exact number. Nate Nancer, he actually talked about this in an interview. He visited a lot of the cities, EU, China. And, you know, he went to Canada and what have you, just to kind of talk about the league season two. And he even mentioned that when he went to China, he saw just random people out there in Shanghai Dragons jerseys, like, supporting the team and just being part of it. So yeah, I mean, we talk about it tongue in cheek, but it's like,
if a team can go 0-40 and still have this type of fan base, just to imagine if one of them wins. I mean, if we have four Chinese teams, one of them has to win a game.
Yeah, well, maybe one of them has a chance, but we'll talk about that later this week.
Yes, because none of them are in the Atlantic Division. Makes sense. One big thing with season one, a lot of the things that players complained about was just fatigue. You know, it was a lot of these guys, you got to remember, came from not playing in a league of any type of like real schedule. There were tournaments and things like that, but there's a lot of downtime
at all for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, streamers, right? You just did your own thing. And so last year you had 40 matches in 4 stages plus playoffs, if you made it to playoffs, and All-Star Weekend, and I don't remember off the top of my head the time in between stages, but it really wasn't that long to really go and travel. Maybe a couple weeks, 3 weeks at the most, but I don't even think they were that long.
I don't remember it being 3 weeks at all. I mean, maybe I think the longest break was like 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of the players, rightfully so, right? A lot of these guys are foreigners, so they got homesick. If you remember, Effect went home for most of stage 3 and all of stage 4. And so they decided, okay, we don't want that to happen again. So now, going from 40 matches in 4 stages, each team will play 20 matches in 4 stages.
It's still a good number of matches. I feel like 20 right now is a good kind of middle. They'll probably add more as you know, popularity comes in, sponsors come in, and
I think if it ever expands to, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, a 20 kind of feels like a good place right now, right before, you know, teams go home at home to see if, you know, they can really work it out schedule wise to do more. It
makes matches
than
mean
20.
More too.
It does. It really does. Because, you know, 40 just felt watered down. And the only reason we talked about 40 games last season and just the awe of it, you know, was the Shanghai Dragons 0-40 season. But outside of that, it's just 40 games just felt like too much.
You just say that out loud, and I'm like, did a team really go 0-40 in the like first season.
Like, you didn't get
lucky ever.
One time. It was the one time the ball bounced their way.
Yeah, there were a few matches last year where it's like, oh man,
close.
Are they going to beat the Shock?
Some teams got close. But it was funny because if you talk to the pro players, all of them said, like, no one wanted to be the team to lose to Shanghai. Like, no one wanted to be the one team.
These guys all went try hard, like they're playing the best team in the league. Right. It's like the reverse effect.
Stage four, Shanghai versus Florida, and Florida's just acting like it's the championship just to not
like
lose
their
against
Super
them.
Bowl, yeah.
Which is funny because Shanghai is really one of the only teams that Florida even beat last year. But another thing with the scheduling is the All-Star weekend is going to be between stages 2 and 3. Don't really care about the All-Star games. The reason I bring this up is because they are adding it to where the gap in between stages are much longer. For example, between stages 2 and 3, it's an entire month off. Now, you have the All-Star game in between, but you still have a month off of actual games between those two stages. And apart from that, it's about 3 weeks in between. Plenty of time to go home or do whatever.
Plenty of time to go home, but Nate Nancer talked about adding patches, you know, trying to work patches into the season and working with a dev team and all that and trying to keep... Because last year we had this argument of like, why aren't the pros playing on the current patch?
Sometimes
they
were
this
two
year
patches
they worked
behind.
Out exactly, and Nate Nancer talked about it, the importance of making sure that the players are playing on the current patch that everyone is playing on to keep it current, so they don't run into that scenario like they did last year, and that's part of that big break too. Not only is it a break for the players, more to your point, Tim, because they complained about that and the league listened. But it's also to help the dev team to keep, you know, the game fresh.
You implement your patch at that point, you know,
exactly.
If you want one, and they have a month to practice on it if they want to do it that way. But
that's another biggie too, because more to your point, Anuja, gives teams to, time to practice. Because last year we talked about, you know, man, the reason why NYXL didn't do well in the playoffs is because they didn't have much time on that patch that everyone else had, you know, I guess, more time on. So this year, I guess they're trying to combat that with this long break, which I guess I'm kind of middle of the road. I like it. I like the idea of playing on a current patch, but a month is a long time for fans to get apathetic, right? And just kind of not forget about the league, but just kind of lose momentum.
Yeah.
I think it's a good break for them. You know, I think that the players, you look at it in Counter-Strike on the complete opposite side, how they would die for a month break in the middle of the year to spend time with their families or travel or do whatever. And so I think hopefully what this leads to is getting the best quality of gameplay ultimately, right? Mm-hmm. People coming back fresh, staying motivated, thinking of new ideas and experimenting with, you know, experimenting with the meta itself, but also designing new ways of playing the game. And I think that would be just good from a viewership standpoint, instead of the straight line, oh gosh, this is the meta. We've only played on this. This is the way we have to play. And if you know, there's a slightest change, like you said, with NYXL, you kind of see how that can throw everything off. So hopefully this just keeps the competitive playing field at a high level for us.
And I think that's the idea behind it. So, well, we'll have to just see. And ultimately, we don't know that there's even going to be patches between every stage. You know, that they play that all by ear. And Blizzard is notoriously for patching super slow. You know, they kind of even based it around Overwatch League last year, I felt like. You know, like they knew that, okay, there's a gap in here. We can put a patch in and complement the pro play. So we'll see what happens there. With the playoffs, obviously adding new teams, you have to change the format a little bit. So after Stage 4 finishes, the top Atlantic and Pacific Division teams automatically make it, along with the next four teams in the standings, regardless of division. So that's huge. The only lock you have in making the playoffs is winning your division. After that, you could be second place in the Atlantic, but if the next top four teams are in the Pacific, then you're SOL.
Yeah, and there are ways for them to kind of structure. And like right now, if you're going to have two divisions, don't, please God, don't split the divisions in half and like, okay, these amount of teams will make it out of the Atlantic. These amount of teams will make it out of the Pacific. Good luck. Have fun. Right. That's not good for the league because you don't get the best teams playing in the playoffs until they maybe break it down even closer by region, maybe have like eventually, and I'm kind of looking towards the future, but
you're looking at the NBA
if they add
style.
Another Chinese, like if they have a Chinese Korean division and then like, you know, kind of break it down by regions, have right. more divisions. And then that way you can be like, okay, the top two teams in each, but right now this is perfect.
Yep.
They nailed it.
And on top of that, so right there, you already have six teams. And then after that, the 7th through 12th place teams in the overall standings will also have a chance to qualify for the playoffs. These teams will be pitted against each other. Obviously, you could tell I copied and pasted this because no one in their right mother uses pitted in normal conversation. In a sudden death tournament, with the top two teams being able to join the playoffs for a total of 8 teams. Which is pretty good. You have 20 teams in the league. 8 of them make it. I think that's right. I don't think you should ever have half the teams making your playoffs. You know, it make it the, like you said, Brett, you want it to be the best teams. Mm-hmm. Taking the top 8 out of 20 teams, to me, you're going to get the best teams there.
And maybe this is being a little bit nitpicky of me, but I would have liked to maybe see, okay, I like the idea, but, you know, maybe do like 7 through 10, right? That's 4 teams. And then two of the teams, right? 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, I had to count. Man, math is fun. But, it's you know, and then two of those. But you have the potential of like an 11 or 12 seed, which more than likely will probably have a losing record, right? Unless there's just a couple of like 2 or 3 bottom-dwelling teams, which there could be. But you run into that scenario where you have a team that's like 400 on the year or 450 on the year, you know, getting that 7th or 8th spot in the playoffs, which kind of sucks.
But that's like incredibly common, right? This is like not anything different.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you do have the 1 year Seattle made the playoffs with the losing record. And it's kind of neat because you get like 2 playoffs in one.
Yeah. And in the NBA, you see that all the time, right? Like you see, first of all, in most leagues, you have half the teams make it, right? NFL, 16 out of the 32 make it, right? Mm-hmm. It's eight, maybe eight make it or whatever. Same thing on NBA, roughly half the teams make the playoffs. And there's always a couple in there that manage to trickle themselves in with the losing record.
16 teams in a division, 8 teams make it.
Yeah.
At least this way, it's through like some form of competition, right? It wasn't just your placement in the season. It's like, look, you had many upsets, like 2 upsets to get there. So I like that.
And ultimately, I mean, it's your job as the 7th or 8th best team after the regular season to win those matches you're supposed to play, that you're supposed to win. So I get it, but I would like to just kind of like tweak it of like 7 through 10, you know, those, and then 2 of those teams make it. That way it's half the league had a chance to be in the playoffs and the bottom half, you know, if you're in the bottom half, you don't really, in my opinion, deserve to even have a chance.
But. Another 2 quick changes here, and I think this is a big one, is two-way players. So now players can sign two-way contracts, which is huge because you had it a lot last year and players complained about this. You had players seriously be on rosters the entire season, and you maybe saw them once because they're bench players, and you're not going to start, you know, shadow burn over Carpe on a regular basis. This allows you to sign those guys who want to keep playing, right? You want them to stay fresh, and you can move them down to your contenders team. Now there are certain rules like throughout, like they can't play on the same team or both teams in 1 week, and it's like there's stipulations behind it, right? But that is nice that they added that for players and teams to have an option.
I would assume that's so teams don't abuse, like, just wearing out a player, right? Like, okay, we have this team again this week against the Mayhem, okay, and then our contender team is playing, you know, the Spitfires team, the Hurricanes. You know, okay, let's see if they can, you know, play these two, and then they'll be back next week for this other game. So I guess to protect the players a little bit.
The other small change, then this wasn't huge, but it's a good segue into the first team we're previewing, is teams must have at least 8 players on their roster. And this was especially big deal for roster deadline, which I think was December 1st, if I'm remembering correctly.
Sounds about right.
And the reason this is a big deal, as we turn the page to our team previews of the Atlantic Division for the Overwatch League Season 2, is with Florida Mayhem. Because if you remember last year, Florida was the only team to start the season with only 6 players. Every other team had more than, you know, they had a bench. Hell, London Spitfires had 2 of the top teams in the world. They had enough to rotate the best players in the world. Florida was the only team that started with 6 members, and I think quickly they realized, like, this is not good, because they went on to later sign players.
This isn't going to work, and not only was it going to work from a logistics standpoint, I think it kind of pissed off other owners, too. More notably, Jack came out and said, hey, you know, we're footing the financial burden of having, you know, 12 players on our roster. These guys have 6, but they're still getting like a revenue share, right? Even though they're not paying their players as much as we're paying
like
ours.
They came in here with 15 pieces of flair. And
do you think Florida did that truly for money purposes? Was that, like, that seems like the only reason you would do that. What else would make sense in that situation?
I feel like, honestly, money may have been a motivating factor. I never discount money being a motivating factor, but I really seriously thought that they could make that all Swedish part Finnish roster work for whatever reason.
They were a good, I think there can be 2 reasons, right? Sure. It might've been the money, but I think it was kind of like a, hey, let's see if this works before we spend the money. I don't think it's that they were against spending money. It's just kind of like, hey, if this roster works, why spend more money, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
because he could even look at to London and be like, okay, you guys filled 2 complete rosters out. Like, why did you do that? And to his point there, by the end of the season, London didn't have 2 rosters. So the argument can go both ways. Looking at some of Florida's stats from season 1, they went 7-33. Map differential of -78. And they were 11th overall in the regular season. Admittingly so, some of those stats are useless. Map differential, and even the win and loss, right? It's more so just conversation pieces, because you have to remember, jumping from season 1 to now, you've had 3 major patches. The meta has completely shifted away from what it was. And teams have completely changed. Florida alone only has 3 returning players. With
just one returning
from the original roster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they do have 3 from last season with Tivik, Seiya Player, and SNT. Tivik is the only one returning from the original 6 roster spot.
How many players did they end up signing? Like, at the end of the season, how many did they have on their roster?
I think 12.
They had a full roster at that point?
Yeah, I think they had a full roster. Because they ended up... No?
No, I think they only...
No, yeah.
They signed Seiya and SNT back in February of last year, which would have still been when the season's going. And then every other player was signed last September.
They only ended up signing
2 new players, 2 or 3new players. So...
And I guess good on them for recognizing a problem, right? Because I mean, this is totally different. I mean, it's a full Korean roster, right? With just Tivik as the lone EU guy.
They do have 1 2-way player in a play.
The lone head.
But he's a 2-way player and he's playing DPS, which I don't know how much time him and Tivik both. I mean, I don't think any of them are going to get playing time. When you have 7 Koreans on the roster, like, you're not going to throw in one non-Korean in there and be like, everyone speak English.
And the poor Florida Mayhem, you know, poor Florida Mayhem fan base too, because, like, okay, they went 7-33 last year. And quite honestly, with the competition getting better this year, even with bringing in that full Korean roster, they're still, to me, kind of bottom tier team. I mean, they're bringing in guys like Tivik, who has some Overwatch League you know, World Cup experience, Overwatch League experience, but beyond that, it's a bunch of guys that played contenders for, like, what was it, Athena, Meta Athena, and, you know, a couple of Spitfire and Dynasty guys that really didn't get a chance to start for them. So, I mean, it's not like, I mean, it looks sexy, right? Like, you bring in a full Korean roster, it's like, okay, all right, okay, this is legit, but...
You should have a chance automatically.
Yeah, I mean, you should have a chance on at least maintaining where you were, or maybe being a little bit better, because there is at least one team in this division, and we'll get to them a little bit later, that is worse. So I mean, there is some chance for some wins there, but honestly, I kind of see them right there, kind of in that same spot they were last year, kind of bottom tier, at least bottom half.
Good news is they can't lose 33 again.
Right. Anoush, good point. That's good point.
Glass is half full. Going into the first expansion team in our preview, you have Atlanta Reign.
Oh, man, the talk of the town, right?
Best logo in jersey. I'll give them that.
I like the color scheme. The color scheme. The Phoenix
is very clean looking. Same thing with Toronto. They got like that red-black kind of thing going on there. Again, though, this is an expansion team that is made up of no Overwatch League players. You have guys coming from all over the place.
Yeah, you have a couple of guys that could surprise. I actually have them as one of my sleeper teams in the Atlanta division. And a lot of their success is going to revolve around DeFran's stability. Right? I mean, is he going to be able just kind of keep... I mean...
We've talked about this.
Mentally or in-game are we talking about here with him?
Mentally.
Both. I mean...
In-game is not going to be that big of an issue, though. Because the dude mechanically is legit. I mean, no one has ever questioned his skill. But mentally can mess with his in-game.
Yeah, mentally can mess with his in-game. Because historically and even recent, if you watch his stream, which I do, because like you said, he's mechanically one of the best players in the world. One of the best DPS in the world, and he does get tilted. I mean, there was a match that he was playing with his teammate Dako, another Korean guy off tank, who's supposed to be one of their, you know, really good pieces that could, you know, propel them, you know, to a potential playoff spot. But he was playing with him and he was like, dude, I can't play with you right now. I can't.
And Dako was like,
why not, man? What are we doing? And he was like, no, it's not you. I just can't play on a team right now. Like,
and let's not forget that he already once signed, announced that he was retiring and never playing Overwatch again, to the point where he rage uninstalled it on stream. And then within 24 to 48 hours later, came back and said, I'm sorry, guys, I'm not retiring. I'm going to come back.
Can I throw you another curveball here?
Please.
The general manager for their team was Selfless's general manager when he played for Selfless. So it's like, you saw what he did there. You know his history.
He got kicked off the team.
Yeah,
He got cut for again, not his play, his actions.
Just toxicity, right. And...
he was signed, I'm sure, maybe for his skill, right? I'll say he was signed 40% because of his skill, 60% because they needed a fan base to start out with, and this was the best way to do it.
He's XQC on the DPS side, like incarnate. Mm-hmm. He has that Twitch following, he has that team relatability to fans. Like he automatically makes you relatable to like 50% of the Overwatch fan base. It's going to help sell jerseys, but it's also, I mean, potentially could be,
they could blow something up at any given match. Yeah. Any given week, just keep an eye on the Twitter, because he could easily announce that he's done in any match. Yeah. Next up, you have Boston Uprising.
Well, one more thing about Atlanta. Did you know that Overwatch League teams have dedicated streamers that aren't part of the team? Did you know
that? Yes, not many of them do, but they have Franny. And they announced Fran. Yeah. And they announced her shortly after signing DeFran, no relation.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of a weird deal because they had to keep, like, you know, non-Overwatch League stuff separate from other entities, and I just thought that was kind
of
strange.
Did you see her picture today on Twitter by chance? Is this what made you think of this? Because a picture of hers randomly popped up on my Twitter feed today, and it got tons of likes. I was like, oh. Yeah, that'd be a good streamer to have right there.
Yeah, I mean, she ain't bad.
She's a pretty legit Zenyatta player.
I'm not talking about looks.
I don't know. Okay.
I won't lie, though. I view that as a team paying for cheerleaders, right? You get some eye candy on the side of the field and jump around.
Hey, look, it's good. It brings in a bigger viewer base to your team anyway, right? So it's all for the team, whether it's directly related and playing for them, or it helps the organization. And it's like any other organization, Optic, all these guys. They all do it.
We've talked about it before where I don't really, if I was an owner, I would not pay anyone a penny to stream, but that's me.
But you go to their stream and they have 15,000 people.
Right. I guess that's the difference, right? But
yeah,
that is me. Moving on to Boston Uprising. This was a team where last year, before season one, no one really gave a shot. I think in our predictions, we all said that we weren't expecting much from them. And they actually turned out to be a surprise, going 26-14, getting third overall, but finishing the playoffs at a measly fifth and sixth place.
Yeah, and this is another team that I have, you know, top of the table, you know, at least, you know, top 1/4, you know, kind of in between that one, not one, but 3 and 5 range. One, they're bringing back something that's I think is very important, outside of continuity of language, continuity of just playing with each other, right? Mm-hmm. And they did lose a few key players, one to retirement mistakes, and then Striker goes to the Shock. But outside of that, they still have a potential MVP in Gamsu, their leader, their main tank, which I believe in this current meta, your leader would be best suited to be that tank, because it's one, it's a very heavy tank meta, and two, I mean, the action in this current patch is all in your face, right? It's all about team fights, being like, it's just a giant ball of things going on, and you need somebody that's in that mix to be vocal and to be that leader, and he's definitely that. And then, you know, they have other players like Note, again, a tank, off tank, better known as a D.Va player, who has the OWL experience, playoff experience last year, and also the World Cup experience with Canada. And these are guys that are on a team that, like you said, Tim, we really didn't give a chance to post Dreamcasper, right? But then after that, they were, I mean, a lot of people saw them as one of the best teams in the league, you know, better than NYXL, maybe not better than the London Spitfire, but definitely in that mix. And both of those guys were a big part of that. Let's see. I mean, there's another exciting player, and this is somebody that we talked about in after the Overwatch World Cup in Fusions. Everyone knows him as he was Team Canada's main tank, the Reinhardt player, or was he UK?
Are you talking about who they picked up?
Yeah, who they picked up? Fusions. They signed him into a 2-way contract, but that's another guy that's pretty exciting, or to kind of have as a third tank in this tank heavy meta, somebody to look out for. I believe he was
Fusions. UK.
Yeah, fusions, not I'm the sorry. Fusion.
I was so confused. Like, I was going along with what you were saying because I didn't want to, like, you know, he's on painkillers. Maybe he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Maybe he doesn't. You poor guy. Just put a blanket fusions, over me and, like.
Not on. Yeah. I thought you were like, yeah, yeah, they signed someone from Fusion. It's so confusing. And I was like, no, they didn't. Like, no, they didn't. You know, maybe he's talking about something. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. The player no, fusion.
It was Canada. Yes. It was Canada. He was yes, Canadian. Because
he came
Reinhardt
from Toronto
player.
Esports. Which a lot yeah. of, so, and I will say this, a lot of their guys are coming from Toronto Esports because when that organization shut down because of the naming rights issue and everything, the mm-hmm. Boston Uprising picked them up to be their contender team. So these guys were already part of the organization, which is
yeah. And another big part there. Of that, Fusions, he'll probably be seeing a lot of time on Toronto's contenders team. So, but I look for him to maybe be a big part of the team coming down the pike. You know, he's still a young guy. A lot of promise there. But I mean, yeah, I mean, it they have everything going for them. They have a superstar, which I believe is you absolutely need that. They have the tanks, and this current meta is definitely something that you need. And then three, they have continuity. So I actually have them kind of in that 3 to 5 range. I still haven't made up my mind where I want each team to be or where I have each team to be. We'll have
and
that
so
coming
no
Wednesday
point
or Thursday
that,
when we
though.
Do our next episode.
Yeah, I mean, next episode but, we can just do our overall prediction.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, I mean, maybe top 8.
Yeah, we'll just do top 8 like or something like that. We'll figure it out because just like last year, right? With with the way they do patches, you just don't know, right? You don't know. Yeah. By stage 2, you know, they could give Mercy a Gatling gun. You know, you just don't know how they're going to change the game. So you just...
Man, if they do...
Teams relevant right. now can be completely irrelevant later.
Yeah.
For our second expansion team here, you do have Paris Eternal. Some of the highlights there are some of the players to look at. They have Soon previously on Valiant. Fincy, which is, again, previously from Valiant. The big thing here, Shadowburn. Who was previously on the Philadelphia Fusion. That was inevitable that he was going to leave Philly. Mm. There wasn't enough room on that roster for him. I love Shadowburn. I think he's a great Genji. I think he's a great DPS. But when you are behind Carpe, you are not going to get playing time.
Yeah, and he kind of flexed in that role of the Zarya, which is probably what he's going to be doing a lot here for Paris Eternal. He's going to be, you know, kind of yeah, flexing in that role a little bit.
While the Goats meta
but
is
yeah,
still relevant.
I mean... Yeah, they have a lot. I don't see them as a playoff team, but they have a lot of guys that are going to come in with a chip on their shoulder. You mentioned one of them in Soon. Soon played about half the time for the Valiant during the season and, you know, during the end of the season and into the playoffs because the Tracer role wasn't as prominent. You didn't really see Widowmaker as that big of a hero pick. Later on down the road into the playoffs. So he kind of lost playing time, which, I mean, was a big reason he left the Valiant to go over to Paris. I mean, he is French, so that's kind of convenient for him. But that was a big deal. And then more to your point, Shadowburn. Shadowburn didn't... I don't remember ever playing in the playoffs or getting any maps or anything like that. So he's coming in, you know... Future, I mean, when he was playing with Russia in the first Overwatch World Cup, we saw this guy as, man, can he be a superstar? Can he be an MVP? And he's kind of fallen off in that regard, so he could revitalize his career there with Paris Eternal.
Because of lack of playing time. Not so much
playing time, yeah. I mean,
not like skill-wise, it's just,
no,
you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's,
Carpe,
it's just...
You're backing up Carpe. They're not going to switch him out.
Yeah, I mean, he's an MVP. Yeah, it's tough to play behind that and then, you know, get playing time. It's just kind of rough.
Side note, they got some of my favorite colors. I bought their skins for a couple of my Overwatch really? Players. Yeah, yeah.
They do have nice... They do have a unique...
It's like a really clean look, you know?
Yeah. They do have a unique... I'm not loving all the expansion teams' names, but I'm loving the color scheme. They at least look good. Our next team here for the Atlantic Division of our part one Overwatch League Season 2 preview. We will do the Pacific next episode, which should either be Wednesday or Thursday. We'll figure that out. Houston Outlaws, a team that I think to most underachieved in Season 1. They still had a good Season 1, but that doesn't mean you can't underachieve. Season 1, they went 22-18 with a 7th overall finish. They missed the playoffs. And this was a team that I think had been big expectations.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team that pretty much every analyst and all of us picked to make the playoffs. So it was a big disappointment that they didn't. And I feel like this is really the only team that is coming back with continuity that actually is doing themselves a disservice with bringing back all that continuity. I felt like they had an opportunity to get better. You know, main tank is locked in. They have one of the best main tanks in the world in Muma. An amazing Reinhardt player.
They picked up
fantastic
Dante
Winston player.
From Shock.
They did pick up Dante. Now Dante can flex, which I guess was a big reason why they picked him up to kind of, you know, maybe if Tracer comes back, he's a world-class Tracer. But he also plays Azaria as well. So in that GOATS meta, he can, you know, kind of fill in that role and be useful, with maybe Spree being the D.Va player and he being the Zarya player. And then, you know, you got Mooma there as a Reinhardt. But I felt like they needed to go out there and get somebody that was a tank, somebody that just plays that role, somebody that could synergize with Mooma and just be the Robin to his Batman, right? So I feel like this is a team that could have got better without continuity being drawn in. Now, there is one guy that I'm looking at, and maybe this is a bias because I'm a Lucio main, and I just love watching that hero being played. But in this current meta, you're seeing a lot more Lucios, a lot more Lucio play, and you could see our boy Boink get some love, get some time, known as one of the best Lucio players in the world. So that's exciting. I mean, that's a part of their team that I wish I got to see last year. Really didn't get to see him a lot because Lucio just
fell off.
Just wasn't a pick. Yeah, I mean, he just wasn't part of that current meta. But this year, I could see it going both ways with Outlaws. I still think they're a playoff team. I think they can improve on what they did last season. But I felt like they could have made at least one more move in the tank role.
I don't see it
kind of
playing
supplement
out.
Mooma.
See, this is where I guess I'm torn, right? And this, I guess, is why they just missed the playoffs last year, and I still think they're a fringe team. It could go either way for them, because I can convince myself why it's not going to work out in this meta, but I can also convince myself why it's not going to work out in a DPS-heavy meta. You know, it's easier to convince me of it not working out than it work out.
See, all you have to tell yourself is the top 12 teams are going to make it to the playoffs, right?
Top
so
eight.
All they have to do is get top 12,
well,
I
get
mean,
a chance.
Top 12,
top
get, 12 a chance.
Get a chance.
So I mean,
because I'm not a buyer in Linxer. I just
Neither
he's a good
I.
widow, but I don't think he you put him up against the other top in the league. I don't think he's that great.
And it really Jake showed that last year. He was constantly getting outdueled. Right.
Jake is a jack of all trades, master of none. He's a fan favorite.
Kind of weird.
Is he the most popular player in Overwatch League? Because I felt like he got the most fanfare in the offseason compared to any
best
player
on camera.
That could be part of it.
I think that's what it is. Really I think he's very likable because it was him and Ruckus that went on some late night talk show.
Oh, he and Ruckus.
Yeah, they went on some. Ruckus and me are best friends. We had dinner together. So
yeah, Tim complimented his ass.
The best for him. Bro, that boy is thick. That boy is thick. It is so. Listen, this is my pro tip for season 2 on Overwatch League. The ratio on Ruckus is unreal. Like, he's sitting down and he looks like a normal person, and he gets up and it's just thick. Thick.
Oh man.
But no, awesome. You know, and I think that's why, right? And obviously they have Optic Gaming backing them, which is, I think, part of why they have higher expectations, just because their fan base is insane. I do know you guys poo-pooed my idea in the pre-show meeting about the organization and possibly being sold. I can see that not so much playing a factor, but it is going to be on the players' minds if it's as unstable as it seems to be, right? That the current ownership of that team is doing a fire sale, it seems like, once a month, dropping people in the org and kind of restructuring. I mean, look at teams like in real sports, right? Like when the Stars didn't have an ownership, or when the Rangers didn't have an ownership, right? Those teams were never stellar. You know, teams that have organization influxes are not typically teams that you see perform.
Doesn't seem to be hurting them right now, but you know, I'll reserve.
I mean, right now we're in
the right to change my opinion, right? But I mean, they did sign Dante, who is kind of middle tier, kind of up there in DPS. So I mean, they're getting interest from players. I guess more to your point, Tim. I think the big thing is like, okay, when we have to have home at home games, and ownership is in flux, where are we going to stand? I mean, you know, we're going to have
a care about that stuff, though. I really think they don't. Like, and the reason, you know, I slightly disagree with the statement is, generally when there's issues within the organization, yeah, it affects the players, but only when they're side by side 24/7. You think of it in the terms of Dallas Cowboys or whoever, right? The organization and the players are always kind of together in everything. In this, these guys are sitting in LA practicing over there. You know, they're behind the computer playing their video game. Ownership's over here, you know, for the most part in the DFW, Houston area, doing their own thing. As long as they're getting their paycheck, I don't think it probably affects them. They're probably just as excited for season two. Maybe they're hearing about the rumors more, but I don't know if it would necessarily affect their play, you know, on the field, as they say, just because they're not really,
I guess, that I'm not closely thinking so associated. Much play, right? Like, I don't think, you know, I don't think Dante's sitting in the middle of King's Row thinking, oh my God, is the team going to get sold? I think it's more,
or
so
where
just,
are we going to play in 2020?
Right. I just think, you know, it's like more of the outside factor of, you know, how active is the organization going to be on trying to fix the team if something's wrong?
And that will happen. I think, you know, issues could come up during this season if something like that were to happen, obviously. But I think headed in, they're probably feeling just as good as everybody else, and that this is the team, and the continuity from bringing most of the players back from last year is probably going to help and keep this team together. It's not a bunch of new faces around with the WTF of what's going on in the backside. Like, these guys have been together for a year. They should be able to handle it fine.
In the, what, third expansion team, you have Toronto Defiant. Brett, that's all I got on Toronto Defiant.
That's all right. All right, so this is a mix of O2 Arant, which is a standout. I mean, they were a standout contenders team. In Korea,
but even then, not so like a lot of I want to piggyback off of that point, because I do have a point to make, and I guess this is a good time to jump in, is because I honestly just do not know many players from Toronto Defiant. A lot of these teams that you see, the expansion teams especially, right, are like, you see and you're like, God, these guys are all Korean, right? They're all coming from contenders. They don't even have Overwatch League experience, right? You also have to take in consideration, though, that I feel like the Korean League is far better than like the NA contenders or EU contenders, right? There is that factor where you have to remind yourself, like, you know, the Korean scene was for the most part always so much far and ahead of any other that it could be better than what it looks like.
They're just playing against different competition day in, day out in those leagues. So
And a lot of analysts have them like top 10. For whatever reason, I mean, maybe a large part of that could be Asher, coming from the Gladiators over to Toronto. Asher, for those who don't remember, was a standout DPS player for the Gladiators, was a big part of why they made the playoffs during that really hectic time where their MVP or possible MVP in Fissure was like, hey guys, I don't want to play with you anymore. Oh, cool. What are we going to do? Asher stepped up in his DPS role and carried him in a lot of games, which they're hoping he could do for them now. Now, he is more notably known to be a Tracer player, which anybody that's playing in this current patch knows that she's really not that viable right now. He also plays McCree, which could get some play. But
not viable in the meta, but good, right?
Yeah, decent. I mean,
the character himself can be made very lethal. It's just with the current GOATS meta, not that useful.
They're gonna, in order for them to succeed, they're gonna have to kind of force him in there. Like, hey, this is our best player. We got to find a way for him to make an impact. So they may be doing some other things to kind of counter that GOATS meta. So we'll see what happens there. They're bringing in another guy and kind of another Valiant throwaway player, which I guess teams in the Atlantic division are kind of picking those guys up and seeing what they can do with them. And Envy, more notably an off-tank player, really good in his own right, just found himself on a team where, you know, Space just took over the Overwatch League world. Space, for those who don't know who he is, one of the best D.Va players in the world, 18 years old, Team USA talent, just all class, all world. And he just found himself in an unfortunate situation like a lot of players do in this league. That's why we see the movement in the offseason where he just didn't have a place. So, you know, maybe hopefully finds that place in Toronto. And a lot of analysts, I guess, think that he will find his place there and be useful.
You have Neko, who is starting the season off with a 3-game suspension for selling his account and obstructing league office investigation.
When will they learn, Tim? When will they learn? Like, guys, did we not see what happened to OGE last year? Did we not see what's happened? I mean, the Overwatch League, you know, give them credit. They even the best players in the Overwatch League are getting cracked down on. They're like, hey, zero tolerance for this. And
I just don't get how it keeps happening. It kind of blows my mind.
Let's
a little
see.
Bit.
I'm looking at the discipline list right now. Out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players are starting the season off suspended. Of those 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 are suspended for some type of account sharing or boosting or selling issue. Only one player, which is Rippa on the Gladiators, is suspended for toxicity and throwing matches. Every other player is suspended.
See, that's
for
the one
boosting.
I respect. That's the one I respect.
I can relate to that.
Account sharing? What's the big deal if you're sharing it with like a family member or something? Like, they care about that? If you and your like cousin are sharing it, if you don't want to buy the game twice.
At that level where SR is like, the drop off could be like extreme. Like, if you lose a match and you fall, I guess they take it more seriously in those like GM and higher ranks.
I don't think they care if you're playing like quick play or anything like that or anything. You know, if you're letting your brother play on your account. But if your brother is getting into quick play or, you know, competitive matches in top 500 situations or, you know.
So you're saying if I'm bronze, they're not going to care if I'm sharing my account.
Yeah, I don't think they're keeping an eye on you. I think you're
But again, just bringing it back to Neko, I mean, that's huge for them. I mean, he's known to be one of the best Zenyatta players in the world. And you're not going to have him for the first 3 games where in the first 3 games, you're trying to figure out who you are, right? I mean, those are important matches where you're coming together as a team for the first time playing on LAN and you're kind of like getting that feel and he's not going to be there. I mean, that's a rough start for them, a team that could be a playoff team.
Up next, you have the Philadelphia Fusion. Season 1 results, 24-16. They were 6th overall finishing the season, yet they got 2nd in the playoffs. They were runner-up to the Spitfire in the finals. And, I mean, I think obviously so, they didn't make a whole lot of changes.
No.
We discussed it earlier. Shadowburn is off, which I think was bound to happen. You knew it was going to happen. They called up Elk from their academy team, which is their only addition for this season. And then Kirby, who was their coach, is now director of Overwatch operations.
Yeah, which is probably best for the team because last year during the playoffs, there was a disconnect between players and coach. More importantly, EQO was forced up there to do an interview, a post-game interview, and he was like, so why didn't you guys change? Oh, because the coach didn't want us to.
I asked that question.
Good on you. But, yeah. I mean, there's two big storylines that I'm looking at for the Fusion this year.
I even left it open, too. I was like, this is a question for anyone. Thinking the coach was going to answer, and then he kind of just stood at the players like, yeah, why didn't you guys change?
Yeah, why didn't you guys? Because you told us not to, asshole. Yeah.
Calling out your players, okay.
I know, but it's there's two big things. One, Poco. Can he step in? Because for those don't remember, I mean, a lot of people know Poco for his insane diva bombs, his insane ulties. They just find a way to get those 3 and 4 Ks. But a lot of people that don't realize that he didn't play in half of those playoff matches for the Fusion. It was he and Hotba sharing a lot of that time, Hotba being the other D.Va player. So, and Hotba's no longer there, so now it's Poco's show to kind of step up and be that guy that a lot of people think he can be. Can he be the guy that more so protects the support and kind of can stay upright and not worry about the big 3K, 4K D.Va bomb? Can he be consistent? We'll see.
My concern I think that's with this roster at the moment is like their star players are players out of the meta, like Carpe and EQO. I mean, unless I've missed something in the off season, I've never seen Carpe play.
Carpe flexes. He's actually, I've seen him play Brigetta a few times. So Carpe is that jack of all. He is what Fleta is to the dynasty. That guy that can just change on the fly and just play pretty much anybody at a world-class level. That's Carpe. Now, EQO, that's another story.
DPS.
I mean, you would rather, but in a meta that doesn't really call for him to be DPS, he can still play at a world-class level on other heroes. And another guy that you just mentioned to him is EQO. Can he take that next step? And be kind of that superstar that he was, kind of the Robin to Carpe's Batman. Can he step into that role and thrive? I don't know, because I mean we may see comps here, guys, where there are no DPS played.
Oh, right? I think wouldn't majority of the time.
Yeah, I mean,
I think majority of the time for now until these now, pros there, find a way that
they're. There is an offset of GOATs where there's, you know, DPS, 2 tank, 2 support. Well, DPS, 3 tank, 2 support. So there are offsets of GOATs where a DPS can kind of find his way in there. But yeah. He's just going to have to make the most of his playing time.
If season one shows us anything, it's that these teams might be pros and they might be full of the best players in the world, but they do not try new things. You know, it was a monkey see, monkey do season last year, which is something that drove me insane. Like, Shanghai was 39, you know, 0-39, and they had one more match to win, but my God, were they still going to try the meta that they've been trying all year that hasn't been working out, you know? Like,
yeah.
Shanghai couldn't play dive to save their lives, and yet they were like, nope, still going to do it.
And hopefully this player bait. Like Bray kind of overcomes that a little bit, right? By giving them an opportunity to practice something new and feel comfortable implementing it, you know, in the actual game itself.
Yeah, I think teams are also going to be more structured. There's more talent coming in the league now. And I think, and we'll talk about the Fuel next week, but I mean, they brought in 2 top-tier coaches to kind of combat that and help with adjusting and all that. So we'll see. A lot of this is going to be see what happens first week and see where everyone lies. I mean, it's really tough to kind of pinpoint.
The last expansion team for this episode in the Atlantic Division, which is probably the most lackluster of them, out of all 8, not even in the Atlantic Division, but Washington. Washington Justice, they have a few. They have Janice from NYXL and Guido from Soul, but everything that I've read up on is no one is giving these guys any chance.
No, definitely not. I mean, I kind of see them not as a real potential like Shanghai 2.0 like season two type team, but maybe even close. I mean, they did fill two, you know, useful roles and Janus, which is going to be their main tank, and then Gaido, which is going to be their Zen. That's two biggies. But outside of that, I mean, they're filling in players from contenders, but not even players from contenders. I mean, these players are from contenders teams that were kind of middle of the road too. So they're not like they were just world breakers in contenders league and NA and Korea, or my US and Korea.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean,
this is why I'm putting it in my top two.
Go for it, because you'll look like a genius, Anoush.
Yeah. You got nothing to lose if they make the playoffs.
Yeah.
You have New York Excelsior, NYXL. Last year, I mean, one of, if not the best team in the league, went 26-14, first overall in regular season, but then just blew it in the playoffs, getting third and fourth. If people remember last year in the playoffs, the big thing about them, and this is from players that I spoke with at the finals, it was not that the meta changed and they couldn't adapt. It's that they refused to adapt. You know, they thought that they were better than the meta and that they were just going to do their thing and work it out. We're not going to practice against it. You know, we're the best team in the league. Why try to get anything? You know, why change anything now? And so I want to know, going into season two, because for the most part, they pretty much have the same roster. In fact, maybe even improved, adding Flower in from their academy team finally. Have they learned their lesson from the finals?
I think so, because I mean, you talked to them, Tim. That playoff left a really bad taste in their mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean,
they were in their backyard, you know, like what a disappointment.
I mean, it was in their backyard, but also they were the best team. Like, there were maybe a few people out there that had the Spitfire being maybe slightly better than NYXL, but it was NYXL's show to lose, and they blew it. But you know, in this current meta, you know, Tim, you just brought up they bring in Flower, a standout DPS. He wasn't 18 last year, so he couldn't play. They're bringing in him, but the Korean teams are known to kind of adjust to meta a little bit more, and your DPS guys aren't really just kind of one tricks out there. They're guys that can play, you know, flex roles and DPS. So probably see Libero to take on that role this year for NYXL. He was a starter last year, DPS player, but he flexes a lot of Brigetta.
I think the meta complements them, right? I think the GOATS meta really complements them. They still have Jonak, reigning MVP, rookie last year, right? Now he's finally has one level of professional play underneath his belt, with Zen being a main factor in the current meta. I still think that they are going to be one of, if not the top team in the league. I don't see that changing.
Yeah, I would have them as my number one. Right now, they're kind of 1A, 1B, with the Spitfire being one of those. I would probably lean towards NYXL being slightly better right now than your reigning champion.
Speaking of the reigning champions, our last team for part one of the Atlantic Division preview. Again, in a couple of days, we're going to have our Pacific preview for the Overwatch League. London Spitfire ended up going, as a stupid pop-up comes up on my computer screen, 24-16, with getting fifth overall in the regular season. So that just goes to show, you know, two losses behind New York puts you down that much. Mm-hmm. That the league is so top-heavy. But then, obviously, they got first overall in the playoffs. Again, really very little to no roster changes. Closer ended up leaving and signing with the Fuel. So we'll talk more about him specifically next time. But they went with the approach of, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, and a large part of why I think they had a really rough stage three last year, and that was the stage right before GOATS, right?
And then GOATS was not in its pure form last year.
Yeah.
In stage four, it was not GOATS. It was maybe a different variation of it, but it was tank heavy.
It was tank,
but it's not what we know now. GOATS.
But I mean, it's the meta is in their favor right now, most definitely. And I mean, if I'm being nitpicky, I think they picked up a few support players, and maybe like one DPS player, but no tanks. So I guess they're kind of just banking on what they have, just kind of working out
Between Jester and... Yeah.
Right.
But again, they have the same Jester thing that Fury. New York has going for them, right? With Bedosin being that top tier Zen, which I feel like you cannot, you can't give enough credit to a top tier Zen. And that's what we saw with last year's play. You know, no one went into season one thinking that a Zenyatta can be as effective as a DPS, right? Until you saw Bedosin and Jonak play. And then you realize, like, oh, so all these Zenyattas who are just sitting in the back line healing, you know, is hurting their team. And so I feel like with them, I will never count those teams out because they have the two best Zenyattas in the league. And it completely, I mean, they can afford having three tanks out there because they essentially have a DPS in their Zenyattas.
Which is why I have them preseason. I mean, huge leap, right? To have them like one and two.
So brave.
But I mean, yeah, so brave, right? But I mean, in this tank heavy meta where you're going to see three tanks consistently and maybe no DPS, you do have those guys in Bedosin and Jonak that are just going to show out. So as long as you have those two guys on your team, you're always going to be good. I'm just being nitpicky. I would have liked to see another tank, but... you know, I'm assuming that maybe one guy, like maybe Prophet steps in that flex role and plays a little bit of Zarya, with Jester playing main tank and Fury playing D.Va. So we'll see. Again, it's really tough. I mean, we're just assuming at this point what the meta is going to be. And I mean, week one could come up and show up and then they're running like your normal comp, right? It's like, we don't know. A lot of this is just assuming what it's going to be.
We'll go over predictions and everything next week. As we talk about, because by then we have talked about the Pacific division and we'll touch on every team. So that way we can go over our teams we think will make the playoffs and eventually win the league and all that fun stuff. So that will be, or I say next week, in a couple of days, we're doing two episodes this week. So we will do our part two of the Overwatch League season two preview in a couple days as we preview the Pacific division. But with all that being said, to tie a bow on the Atlantic division preview, it's not the easiest division. I don't know. Here's this weird concept, right? The Pacific division is going to be more difficult because the teams that are in it are all closer skilled to each other. The Atlantic Division team is more difficult because it's just extremely top-heavy. You have Boston, New York, London, Philly. I mean, right there are four playoff teams. You know, you have Outlaws, which were one team away from being a playoff team.
You're just hoping to be in a play-in game over there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know,
yeah.
I could definitely see in the Atlantic Division maybe all four. It's a huge leap, but maybe all four outside of the two division winners, the guaranteed spots all coming from the Atlanta division because it's so top heavy.
Yeah. Well, because you think, right? It's either going to be London or New York if they win that division. So you have one of those instantly in.
Yeah.
Then you still have Boston, New York, Philly.
Yeah.
You know, it's
with maybe Houston or Toronto being one of those sleeper teams.
And Atlanta, I mean, I could even almost say Atlanta might be a sleeper team. But again, that's a wild card at best. So we'll see. It's going to be exciting. We're 10 days away. 10 days away, gentlemen. And we still have the Pacific Division to touch on. But before we get to the end of this show, Let's do some e-news, shall we? E-news, again, is brought to you by Spaceman Company. You can check them out on Twitter, @SpacemanCompany. Their website, spacemanco.com. They make lovely t-shirts. Go check it out. In CSGO, you have Mouseports, man. Starting off the post-major shuffle early. I guess that's what happens, though, when you don't make it.
Not really post-major if you don't make it. Yeah, you know, they're just starting the offseason now.
Announced today, releasing Chris J, Sonny, and their coach.
A surprise with...
Didn't they also announce Steiko?
I don't think they announced Steiko. I think those are just the three that were released for now. But
okay.
Chris J will find a home quickly because he's so versatile. He's able to IGL. He can op a little bit for you. He can also play rifle. He's shown to be able to do all of that. So and his English is great. So I think he'll find a team quickly. I think Sonny will too. Both of these guys were good. I think this
Steiko
team
was released,
just,
by the way.
Steiko was released?
Yeah, or he was so moved to the people. Inactive roster. So call it what you will.
So about to be released. Yeah, so I mean, they're down to what, Oscar and Rops at this point?
So you got it flipped, I guess, in the show notes. Sonny is still on the team. Chris J, Steiko, and their coach is out. According to Liquipedia, one of you is wrong. No. But how will we
most likely
find that
them,
out?
But we'll go with me for now. Yeah, I mean... Chris J will find a team quickly. I don't really understand the logic of it, about him. But this team needed to make a change. They'd underperformed. They didn't make the major. You got to do something. And this is a pretty drastic move. I mean, you're releasing quarter of your roster here. Yeah. You're releasing your coach.
You're hitting the restart button. That's what you're doing.
Yeah. But they have a good... One of the best young talents in the game. So.
It was funny because I did want to talk one time, maybe like post-major when we're talking about teams moving around. My question to you gentlemen were going to be, when is Rops looking at leaving the team?
It's going to be his team.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks like it was the other way around. I guess he's the one staying and everyone else is going. You have Peter is playing with...
Did I not fill in that blank?
No, you didn't. I know the team. I just can't remember. It's the
I drew
the
a
South
blank
African
and I went
team.
To go look it up. It was Bravado, right? But yes. Not Bravado. Denial.
Denial. Which is a... What we have come to terms... And we'll play the audio next episode because I think we're... And it was so perfect because last week we talked about, you got to be careful about that new ownership with Denial. Don't know if it's top notch.
I think I even said, like, let's give them let's see how they do. Well, man, get ready. Man. Next Monday, we got some great audio for you from this lovely, lovely new owner of theirs.
Didn't last a week. So Peter, though, is back. That's entertaining. His parents are lovely people to sit with.
They are.
And Smuya leaves Big.
That one is shocking. I mean, absolutely shocking. Not for the fact that it didn't work out because of his personality, but for the simple fact that he did it right before the major. I mean, that's a gutsy, bold move. And he said, I would rather not play than go play in the major. That's how bad it was. I mean, like, that's literally what he's done to himself here. I think this is going to hurt him big time.
Absolutely.
He'll be able to get on to an NA team. He's from the UK, so obviously language barrier is not a problem there for him either, but he's not going to get a better opportunity. Dougie?
Yeah. Shout out to listener Doug. Getting Twitter famous as Decay tweets out or retweets one of his how's his English.
I didn't realize he was joking, so I even gave him a proper answer.
Knowing Decay, he probably didn't pick up on the sarcasm. Because let me tell you what. I picked it up because our listeners are the best and they're hilarious. And you know what? I'm going to put this out there right now. If you are ever trolling Decay or any of those guys on Twitter, just let me know. You hit up @TheCenterRing because there's nothing I love more than trolling Decay. Just because he really doesn't have a sense of humor about his work at all.
No, yeah, he doesn't.
He takes it very... He's a serious CSGO reporter. serious esports. In Call of Duty, you have Zuma filling in for Optic.
This is awesome. This is great. So Optic didn't, not Optic, FaZe didn't make league play, as everybody famously knows now. Mm-hmm. So a lot of good talent on that roster still, though. They were just
sitting there.
Yeah, I mean, so Zuma obviously being one of the better players, having a great background, got an opportunity to fill in as a sub for them. So he is on the sub roster for Optic for league play. It's unfortunate for him that out of all the people to have to step in for at this point in time, to have to do it for Dashy really, really sucks, because Dashy is on this, I mean, just tear. You even watch him in like some of the sub games that they do and stuff like that, and some of these like scrim practices. I mean, he looks another level. Well, he is out for the week. If you do a sub, it has to be for like a week period. So he'll be filling in. He'll be filling in for them, and we'll get a chance to see Zuma play with Optic. I think that'll be super fun, because that FaZe Optic rivalry, and to see kind of the face of FaZe playing on Optic and wearing the green, that'll
you
be
think
neat.
FaZe
and,
fans love that.
You know, I think they do, because Zuma's really likable. Like, Zuma's a
they're
a
just
good
happy
player.
To see one of their own in the.
Yeah, what? I mean,
maybe
for
we
both
could
sides.
We could talk about it more next week, but I'm gonna present the question: what's gonna happen first? FaZe is gonna qualify for Pro League again, or league play is gonna happen? It might be FaZe.
I'm definitely not betting on league play at this
point.
Oh,
I'm so salty about it. It's not even funny. In other esports news, you had Genesis 6, in fact, happen over the weekend. Big, big grassroots Super Smash Brothers tournament. HBox for Melee defeated Axe.
As he got booed the whole time.
HBox did, of course.
Yeah, like, but so, they're so rude to him, and I don't get it. Like,
all of it.
But does he, like, at this tournament, I watched, like, bits and pieces, saw some of the replays primarily.
Do not let him trick you. Don't let him trick you. He's going to act friendly, and then he's going to just be a complete bitch.
Where does he do all that stuff at? Like, it doesn't seem like it's in the public eye.
It's on Twitter,
but
it's also, like, with other pro players. Like, he is notorious for not warming up with other pro players. He has his little crew, like, of Liquid guys and certain pros that he'll warm up with. But, like, if Mango wanted to warm up, I think it's just kind of like a common thing of like, hey, I'm about to go play a match. Do you mind if I warm up with you? You know, I think it's just like in that scene, right? Like the top 10, they're just kind of respect each other. And you're like, yeah, man, let's go warm up. You know, he's never been like, but he's always like that. You know, you go watch old videos and he'll even say like, yeah, I'm really trying to work at being more likable. You know, like these guys are my colleagues, but they're not my friends. I want to make them my friends. When like everyone, like go watch like Summit Smash next year, right? And it's like everyone else is just laughing and having a good time, and then there's
and he's just kind of off in the corner. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, but he's a winner, so it's hard for me to hate on how he, you know, how he approaches the game, whether that be practicing with his own crew or whatever. Like, he finds a way to win, and he's been a winner for a long time.
But
so,
like I said, we could have a whole segment on the HBox saga, because it's also sometimes when he wins, he'll time out strat. Like,
yeah,
you know, he plays
just to be that kind of person.
And he, you know, I get it. Winning is winning, but we all know what's a bitch move and what's not. And letting the time run out is a bitch move. But he defeated Axe, and that doesn't help his case either, right? Because Axe is so lovable. You know, it was a whole Pokemon Finals. You had Jigglypuff with HBox, and Axe plays Pikachu. And Axe, I mean, he doesn't get to Finals, you know? He's made a career of making the top 8, but not making the Finals. It's just, that's not what he does. And the fact that he was there on Genesis, one of, if not one of the biggest tournaments for Melee, or for Smash now, I think that crowd was, HBox stood no chance with that crowd.
Oh, it was brutal.
He was not winning that crowd over.
No.
And on Ultimate, very successful weekend. This is really like the first big, big tournament for Ultimate, and it competed in viewership.
No, it did great.
It was right there with Melee. I would still like to see Zero.
Depending on Twitter, I mean,
it bothers me that Zero doesn't compete.
I don't understand the reasoning behind it because he's so involved with every other aspect of this game. It's he's out there.
He's ambassador of the game, which, I, you know, if anything, that's good.
But he doesn't do anything wrong. There's nothing, anything.
It's cool.
Wrong
he was watching it
doing.
On his stream. He was still promoting the event.
Yeah. You want to see him out there, though.
Yeah.
For somebody that has that level of love and enthusiasm for the game, plus the talent to go along with it, you want to see those people in there. And he's also, again, one of those like proven winners. So
it's not
a lot of people like him.
He did have like 10,000 people in there watching him watch Genesis. So it's like
he's got the following.
Okay, maybe this is a money thing.
It most likely is, right? Because he's busy making YouTube videos. He's busy doing a lot of other stuff that is not related to necessarily playing 24/7 or grinding the way. You know, I guess with somebody like him who has also been a champion, they know what it takes to be a champion. And maybe if he doesn't feel like he can dedicate that level of time to it, he doesn't want to do it. But yeah, from fan base, man, everybody wants to see him out there.
And more importantly, he made the TCR one-liner Hall of Fame.
That's right.
That's true.
That is correct. But in there, in Ultimate, you did have MK Leo on Marth and Lucina, defeated Void on Pichu and Wolf. A lot of variation for fighters. So that's always good to see. That was actually a really good final, though. MK ended up winning after being in the losers, and he came through, reset the bracket. So very, very entertaining finals on both Melee and Ultimate. I thought it was a very, very good weekend. And the Ultimate future is looking quite, quite bright, if I do say so myself. Also quite bright was this episode. In fact, it might be the best episode ever. But that will do it for episode 141 of The Center Ring, a.k.a. TCR, a.k.a. your favorite esports podcast. That's part one of our Overwatch League Season 2 preview. I hope you enjoyed it. Let us know on Twitter, at The Center Ring. Even better, join our Discord. You'll find the link on Twitter and our website, tcr.gg. Tell your family, tell your friends. Smash that follow button. We'd love to have you as part of the family. In a couple of days, keep an eye on Twitter. We are going to do our Pacific preview for Overwatch League Season 2. Got a lot to get to on that. All of the new Chinese teams. Brett is going to take you wall to wall, no stone unturned on those. Dallas Fuel, a lot of teams to get to with them. But that will be here probably Wednesday or Thursday. We'll see what's up. But that will do it again. Thank you all for listening. If you skipped around, I love you all the same. For Anuj, for Brett, I'm Tim. We'll see ya.